Hi, welcome to It's a Kinetic Thing with Karen Kay. This is Karen, and today we're going to talk about some different peptides.
So I want to talk about the most popular peptides. The first one is BPC-157.
Yeah, so just to start out with, peptides are just short chains of amino acids that occur naturally in our body, and we have probably in the last, 5 to 10 years, become more adept at identifying those peptides, reproducing those peptides, and learning what they do in our body. So BPC-157 is a very common popular peptide. The BPC stands for Body Protective Compound, and it is great for a variety of different things. One of the things that it works really great with is musculoskeletal injuries, whether that's a strain, a sprain, a muscle pull, a fracture. It really helps speed healing time with that. Traditionally, to get the best bang for your buck, the BPC tends to work better injectable. We use a little insulin needle and inject it into the area that you're hurting. Also, you can take BPC orally, and it works really great in that form for people that have irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's disease, things like that, that it really helps heal their gut.
Question on that, since they say that BPC is actually from the lining of your stomach is where it's created, is that taking it orally is going to really help with the stomach because that's where it's created anyway, and it's just going to help coat the stomach? Is that kind of what it does?
It heals the mucosa of the gastric lining.
Okay.
And the intestinal lining is what it does. And so, Crohn's is like ulcerative colitis, and where you get sores and leaky gut and ulcers inside your intestines, and it really heals that lining back.
And so a lot of people ask about the oral versus injections. If somebody was taking it, an injection because they had an injury, would that also help with their stomach since it's still going in their bloodstream?
Yeah, it will help for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
But I do think, if you're really targeting a specific issue, you want to take it in the correct form that's going to be best for you.
Who's an ideal candidate for BPC and who should stay away from it?
Anyone. It's made in your body. Anybody with injured tissue, it's great for. It also has been known to be cardioprotective, help regulate blood pressure. It helps improve nerve regeneration and decreases neuroinflammation. There's some talk that it may help with depression and it may help alcohol withdrawal symptoms and oppose intoxication. So there's a lot of things you could use it for. Really, not a lot of contraindications to it, just a matter of finding the right dose and the right route to take it for what's going on.
And let's talk about the dose, because there's always the question of where do you get it and where is the best place to get it. And obviously, there's a lot of online places, and those online places say for research purposes only. Tell me the difference between getting it from a wellness clinic like yours versus these people that are just ordering it for less money, but online, and are they getting the right kind of thing?
Yeah, that's the problem. When you're getting it online and it's clearly labeled research purposes only, not for human consumption, you really don't know what you're getting. There is no independent testing. There's no looking for sterility, for purity, for potency. You could get anything. And a lot of this stuff is coming from overseas. I'm hearing rumors that with the tariffs happening and some of the restrictions on things out of China and Japan, we're going to see less of that being able to come across. But you just don't know what you're getting. When you get it from a reputable provider, it's coming from a compounding pharmacy that has been licensed by the FDA. Their products are going out to an independent lab each batch, and they're being tested for potency and purity and sterility. So you actually know what you're getting.
Much safer.
Much safer.
It just always just kind of astounds me that people are willing to buy something online. It says on there for research purposes only, and inject it directly into their stomach.
Yeah, it's crazy, but people do it.
There's still so much risk behind that. I just don't quite understand that concept. So let's talk about CJC-1295 with Is it ipamorelin?
Ipamorelin.
Ipamorelin.
Mm-hmm. So it's a growth hormone releasing hormone peptide. So it basically helps your body better produce and release human growth hormone, which obviously, you know, we are in high supply of when we're young and growing and healthy. And we start to fall off of that as we get older. So CJC 1295 is a great peptide that has a little longer half-life than some of the other human growth hormone releasing peptides. It's generally a twice a week injection, and it really helps with things like recovery from working out, muscle strain. It helps burn fat. It has been shown to help improve sleep, improve human growth hormone levels in the body, slow the look of aging, promote muscle growth and fat burning. And that's typically my people that like that are people that are working out hard, training hard, wanting to cut fat, build muscle, recover quicker from their workouts. They typically really like the CJC with the ipamorelin. So it's those are two different peptides mixed together that both help release human growth hormone.
And why are they always mixed together?
They just have a longer duration of action and a more effective action when mixed together.
And then on the growth hormone, explain why that's a good thing for the releasing of a growth hormone. Does that just help repair?
It helps repair, yeah. Okay. It helps repair muscle and tissue and recover quicker.
Okay. So we want growth hormone
in
our bodies. Like when we were younger.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you have any, like what to expect in the first 30 days versus 90 days? I mean, I took it. I mean, I saw it immediately.
Yeah. What did you see?
I saw fat loss.
Mm-hmm.
For sure fat loss, sleep. And the one I got from you, it recommended taking it like 1 to 2 hours before bed.
Yeah.
You get a deeper sleep. It definitely takes you down that deeper where you're like I wear an Oura ring and the deep sleep was always almost 2 hours. Now if I get an hour of deep sleep, I'm lucky.
Yeah.
So it definitely did that. And then what else did I see? Well, I think joint wise, I felt a difference in just joint pain, just your overall achy joints. I really noticed when I got up out of a chair after sitting for a while, I didn't have that stiffness.
If you're, you know, if you're somebody that's working out, training hard, you're going to notice where before, you know, say you worked your biceps and it took you 3 days for them to not be sore. Suddenly it takes 12 hours and then they're not sore again. So it is really repairing that tissue and building it back up. And then, like you said, just seeing belly fat burn off.
I noticed that immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And then is there any kind of risk of overstimulating growth hormone?
Not if you're taking it at the recommended dose.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that one that you need to take for a certain amount of time and then taper off, or can you continue taking
it? Usually we recommend do like a 90-day cycle and then come off for 2 to 3 months and then do another cycle.
And is that the same with BPC, or can you stay on BPC?
Most of them we want to cycle on and off, just because you don't want to completely suppress and turn off your natural ability to produce those peptides.
Okay. Now let's move on to the big one, which everybody's heard about, is semaglutide and tirzepatide, which are peptides, which I don't know if everybody knows that.
Yeah. People think of them as a drug, but they are a peptide. You know, another peptide that everybody's heard of but thinks is a drug is insulin. Insulin, you know, is produced in your pancreas, and it's a peptide that helps your body regulate blood sugar. Well, you know, now we have come up with these other two, semaglutide and tirzepatide, and both of those are glucagon-like peptide, and they both help regulate insulin resistance, regulate your blood sugar level. Both of them slow your digestive tract so you get full faster, stay full longer. And they also have some effect on the pleasure centers in our brain. So they've really done a good job of helping quiet cravings for sugar and carbs and things like that. You know, the first one that came out was semaglutide, also known as Ozempic or Wegovy. People on average lose about 6 to 8% 10% of their total body weight over the course of a year. So again, it depends on how big you are, how much you lose, and also is somewhat dose dependent. Everybody is going to need a different dose. You know, I hear that every day. Well, my friend just never got past the lowest dose and she lost 30 pounds in 3 months. Why aren't I losing? Well, you don't have the same genetic makeup. You don't have the same level of insulin resistance. You're not eating the exact same diet. So there's many things that go into it. But basically, it is helping your body overcome insulin resistance. When you're insulin resistant, that insulin's not getting into the cells and burning up the things that you put in your body to fuel it. They tend to store. So when we take those, they help lower that insulin resistance. We burn our food more efficiently. We're not eating as much. We're not eating as often. We're not craving junk. And so it works really great. Now they came out with a second generation, tirzepatide, also known as Zepbound or Mounjaro. Mm-hmm. And it actually hits two insulin receptor sites. So even better job of lowering insulin resistance. People on average are losing somewhere around 15% of their total body weight over the course of a year. So a little bit more effective. Just, I haven't seen actual research, but anecdotally, it seems like there's a little less nausea with it. Although, again, everybody can be different. You know, I have a lot of people that didn't tolerate semaglutide because the nausea, vomiting did great on tirzepatide. I've tried them both. I can't tolerate the tirzepatide at all, and the semaglutide doesn't bother me a bit.
Funny.
Yeah. So everybody's a little different. Mm. And so you want somebody that maybe can offer both and work with you through what you need. But they both really are probably the biggest game-changing drugs that have come out in 50 years.
So what's the difference between that they can get from you versus what they get from their primary care that they have to pay thousands for?
Yeah, it's just the version that you get from your primary care, the brand name versions, obviously are manufactured by a big drug company. They're manufactured in bulk. The drug company sets the price. Insurance, obviously, each individual insurance provider has some say on what they cover and at what level they cover it, how much your copay is going to be. But they're, again, they're mass produced and they're controlled by the drug company. We can get the base ingredient, either semaglutide or tirzepatide. We can get it from a compounding pharmacy and we can compound that active ingredient and get you something, you know, that is comparable to what you get through the major drugstore. It's just going to be less expensive. We can also do a lot better job of titrating your dose because those that are produced by the big drug manufacturers, they only have four set doses and they're in a pre-filled auto-inject pen. And so you have to take that dose uh-huh. or the next dose. And a lot of my patients don't need that big a jump in dose, or they need a smaller than the smallest dose. And so by compounding, we can do those things. We also add some things to them, like maybe B12 or B6. Some of them even add some of the other peptides in them just to help them work a little better.
And the ones you get from your primary care are obviously more expensive and they're not always covered under insurance, only if you're diabetic. Is that right?
Typically, most of the insurances are only covering them if you are a diabetic. There's a few insurances out there that may cover them if you're morbidly obese. And again, your level of coverage, it might be a tier one coverage. And if you're normal, drug copay is $20, you get the $20, or it might be a level 4 copay and your copay is $500. I just don't know. You know, every insurer is different in what they allow.
Well, and I also think it's with working with you, you have other things to help them. You've got supplements, you've got the scale to weigh on that actually shows you everything, their body fat percentage and
And they're getting real counseling mm-hmm. about, you know, what's really important. They're getting trained on how to inject themselves, when to inject themselves, you know, how much protein they need in their diet. We're watching to make sure they're losing fat and not losing muscle mass. And all of those things, you know, make it a little different coming to a wellness clinic versus your primary care.
Yeah, you're actually getting coaching on the whole weight loss process. What do you look for when you know someone is a good candidate for it?
Well, we're going to look at a couple things. One, we need to make sure them or no one in their immediate family has had medullary thyroid cancer or multiple endocrine neoplasia syndrome type 2, MENS 2. We don't want a history of pancreatitis because that medicine can throw you into pancreatitis. And we want to watch those people that have that are type 1 diabetic typically are not a good candidate for the GLPs, although some endocrinologists are using it a little bit in conjunction with insulin. But in general, we wouldn't use it on a type 1 diabetic. Really want to make sure that someone is motivated to change their lifestyle habits. You know, if you come in thinking, just give me this magic shot and I'm just going to magically drop weight, you may drop some. It's not going to be good, you know, when you've heard over and over about Ozempic face and how people look horrible when they lose weight on that. Well, it's not everyone in general. It's the people that lose muscle mass. And that's because they're not getting adequate protein. So if they're not going to get their protein in, they're probably not a good candidate. They're going to end up just aging themselves. They may get some weight off, but they're going to end up really aging themselves.
So on that, taking a full dose, like you start them at the low dose and you increase it as they need it. What's the difference? I keep hearing so much about microdosing and that so many people are getting on it to microdose with it.
There definitely is some advantages to microdosing, a lot less side effects of nausea, constipation, GI symptoms with microdosing. There are some people who are really motivated and following all their dietary advice that are still losing good amounts of weight on microdosing. Maybe somebody that doesn't have a lot of weight to lose, but they have that stubborn 20 pounds they can't get rid of. Microdosing might be a good option for them. We're also seeing people use microdosing for the effects it has on that pleasure center in our brain. And so it does seem to help with cravings, not just for sugar and carbs, but people that have issue with alcohol or other substances. It seems to quiet those cravings. Even I've seen it used for gambling addiction, people with anxiety and depression. We're doing some microdosing and they're coming off some of their anxiety and depression meds with it. And so microdosing is basically just taking maybe half of the recommended starting dose or starting dose. Some people, if they're super sensitive, can even get by with a quarter of the starting dose. Obviously, less expensive when you compound it because your medicine lasts longer that way. You know, there's some good research about improved cardiovascular health, decreased obstructive sleep apnea on the medication, improved kidney function on the medicine. And so maybe they don't even need to lose weight, but they want those other benefits, then microdosing might be a good option for those people.
And then is it also an option if you've lost your weight, you're worried about gaining it back, microdosing it just to keep you at that?
Yeah, it's a good option for that as well. Okay. Absolutely.
Okay, let's move on to MOTC.
Okay.
Might be my favorite one. Well, I don't know. BPC is up there too. I like BPC a lot. So it seems to be like getting very popular.
Yeah, it really, you know, it's a peptide of 16 amino acids. It is produced in the mitochondria, and it really shows a key role in signaling and energy production of the mitochondria. It's been really shown to regulate metabolic functions throughout the body, especially turning glucose into usable energy. So letting you, again, burn that food that you put in your body more effectively as fuel and not storing it as fat decreases insulin resistance, improves athletic performance. It is great to help with weight loss, sometimes in conjunction with, I've got somebody really resistant on one of the GLPs, and we can put the MOTC with it and really start jumpstart that fat loss. It's not really burdensome in that we can, it's a 3-time-a-week injection, and we do that for about 4 to 6 weeks, and then it becomes a once-a-week injection. And so it's not as cumbersome as some of the peptides that have short half-lives that we have to take every day or twice a day. So that's kind of nice too.
Yeah.
But I would say it's the biggest useful thing is really that helping you burn that glucose more effectively and so therefore helping get rid of some body fat.
It's interesting because I take it on the mornings I take it first thing in the morning when I get up. And I would say within, because I back up a little bit, I never feel hungry. I just have never been that person. I'm not a big foodie. I don't really think about food. And so I never have like stomach growling. Like people get, what do they call it? Hangry. Like that doesn't, it's never been my thing. But I would say within 2 hours of taking it, there's a moment where I actually feel really hungry. It's like it's burned everything off. And my stomach growls, but then it doesn't take long and I'm not hungry anymore. But I feel like it's working because I feel that hunger, which I don't normally feel. And it's only usually about 2 hours after I take it. It's like, whoa, okay, something went to work. And you can really tell the difference.
Interesting.
It's really interesting. I want to ask you about mitochondria because that's like a thing we are hearing. I hear mitochondria all the time, maybe because I work with you, but I feel like that's such a word now that's being used. Can you kind of break that down, what that is?
It's like the powerhouse in every cell in your body.
Okay.
It's the engine that runs every cell. And so we want to fuel that so that our cells are working effectively, efficiently, and doing what they're supposed to do. You know, if you have an engine that's out of gas or broke down, your car is not going to go down the road very well. So your mitochondria is that powerhouse of your cell, and you want to make sure it's working efficiently and effectively.
Okay. I swear I've never heard of mitochondria to the last year. Now it's like everybody's talking about it. It's kind of like now that we know that protein, we've been on crash diets our whole life. No one ever talked about getting the right amount of protein. And now all of a sudden we realize protein is the longevity gene that helps us get there.
Yeah. Eating rabbit food all day is not the way to lose weight.
And I think about how many people, and I was one of them that did that forever.
Yeah. It's so important whenever you're trying to lose weight to really know how much protein you need. And yeah, you know, it's work. It is definitely work. But I try to get 150 grams of protein a day, and I have to work at it. But I have a sweet tooth like nobody's business, and I could live on chocolate if I let myself. But since I have been really cognizant and strict about getting my 150 grams of protein, I don't have those cravings anymore. I can walk by chocolate all day long now because protein keeps your blood sugar at a steady state, where carbs and sugar are going to spike it and then drop it. And that's why you get these cravings, mm-hmm. because, oh, my blood sugar's dropped. I need something. Mm. Well, that's your body playing tricks on you. But if you fuel it with protein, it's a slow release time sensitive substance, and it's going to keep your blood sugar steady state all day, and you're not going to get those cravings. And so it's amazing how much easier it is to diet when you are getting the right amount of protein. So for most people, we recommend 1.5 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight. So if you don't know how to do your kilograms, you just take your pounds and you divide it by 2.2, and then you multiply by 1.5, and that's how much protein you need a day. And so most people aren't getting anywhere near that, and women are worse than men. I think that may have some role in why men lose weight so much easier than women.
Totally.
Not all
sense.
Of it. They have more muscle mass, mm-hmm. as well. Too muscle burns your fuel more effectively, but it definitely makes a big difference. And so ladies, if you're trying to lose weight and you're trying to just eat salads, that's not the way to go.
Never works. Well, it is crazy, but it is hard to get that number of protein. I mean, it has to be a job.
Yeah.
You have to really focus on it because, boy, it's tough.
When you think of, you know, an average boneless, skinless chicken breast is about 25 grams of protein a day. So you've got to multiply that by 5.
Yeah. It's our eggs. I was having eggs over the weekend. Well, 6 eggs still isn't enough protein. And it's like, it is a challenge, but boy, I can totally see the difference in what it does as far as like even hunger or just, it just makes you not want to eat because you feel full.
Yeah.
But you don't feel full like if you eat like a big meal and you've got carbs and you've got bread and everything, you just feel bloated.
You feel bloated and want to sleep.
This is different.
Yeah.
When you're getting the right amount of protein.
You just feel satiated.
Yeah. You're just comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's can MOTC, you talked about this a little bit, but just to verify again, you can use MOTC and tirzepatide or semaglutide together.
You can
kind of help each other.
I wouldn't start that way just because I want to see, you know, how much the GLP-1s working. Mm-hmm. But those people that are slower or resistant to it, I would definitely add it. And for some people who maybe didn't want to do the GLPs for whatever reason, then I may do MOTC by itself. I wouldn't throw both of them together in the beginning on everybody because I hate to put too many new things at once. Then you don't know what you're reacting to if you're right. having a reaction. And we don't want to lose too much weight too fast because then you're going to get muscle wasting and you're not going to get the fat reduction that we want.
Need. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to DSIP.
Okay, so DSIP. It stands for deep sleep inducing peptide. So most of these have a reason for their name. And again, it's a chain of amino acids. And what it really does is it helps people that have sleep disturbances that can't get into deep sleep, that REM sleep that we want. It helps improve that. It helps improve the alpha waves. It helps reset the circadian clock genes in our brain. It is found, interestingly, in high concentrations in human milk.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah. It does cross the blood-brain barrier. It's been known to be an anticonvulsant, so they have used it for that in the past. It is protective of your neurons in your brain. It does help relieve or alleviate kind of the symptoms, the emotional, physical symptoms we get from stress. So it helps just kind of calm you. It does have antioxidant benefits that help slow down cell damage. But I would say probably the biggest thing that people love it for is just being able to sleep
really
deeply.
Sleep.
Yeah. So it's such a good product for that, for those people that just can't sleep.
Everybody, you hear about melatonin, but now I'm starting to hear that melatonin is not great for you over a long period of time. What's the difference, obviously, between something like this and melatonin?
Well, just different substances that work different ways, don't have all the same properties. Like I said, the DSIP can help with other things like your cognition. They've shown that it helps high blood pressure, again, because you're getting that deep rest sleep and calming. Yeah. So melatonin, not that as active on those areas. Melatonin, the problem with melatonin, why it gets a bad rap, I think, is it has a very short half-life. It's great to take to fall asleep, but you're not going to stay asleep on it because it's gone in an hour. Unless you get it compounded in a time-release, slow-acting capsule from a compounding pharmacy, but stuff you get over the counter, it's going to help you go to sleep, but you're not going to stay asleep.
Is it something on this DSIP that you can take every night, or do you cycle on and cycle off?
You can stay on it indefinitely. It's better to cycle off. You will start to, as you get used to it, usually we start out with like 100 micrograms, and you want to take it about 3 hours before bedtime.
Okay.
You can start going maybe every 3 days after a couple weeks and go down to 50 micrograms as your body starts getting in the habit of going into that deep sleep.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, does your body sort of get into that rhythm, like the whole circadian rhythm
like
thing?
Like it's kind of remembered how to do that.
Okay.
You know, I think some people's body forgets.
Well, mine's completely forgotten. It has no recollection whatsoever of what you're supposed to do. Although the other night I fell asleep within a minute. You know, my aura ring tracks when you fall asleep.
Yeah.
Like within a minute. I was asleep. So I always go to sleep really well. I just don't stay asleep.
Yeah.
Do you ever see the difference between mood or sleep first? If people's mood improve and then their sleep, or is it kind of one or the other?
I'd say it varies on the person. And usually it's whichever is the most bothersome to them that mm-hmm. they notice first. You know, if not being able to go to sleep and stay asleep is their big issue. They see that. If they're really looking more because they're anxious all the time, they're going to notice that first.
I think it's interesting, too, with the thing that it helps with your, like, nervous and mood and all that with, like, cortisone levels. If you're stressed out, to me, that would be such a calming thing to be taking this. I think about last year when my mom was in the hospital, I thought, man, I wish I would have had something like this to just kind of calm all those anxious thoughts and stuff when you try to go to sleep at night when your brain kicks in. And
yeah.
You think about everything.
I think us women are the worst about that. Like, you know, waking up at 3 a.m. thinking about something that we have no control over at 3 a.m.
But it's like your brain just kicks in as soon as you lay down and you sit up and it goes away. It's like the craziest thing. Yeah. So that kind of, I think for women going through stressful times, that would, to me, would make sense. Can you overlap them with like the growth hormone, the CJC? Can you take them together?
Yeah, you can. Again, I always, you know, do that cautiously and be on one for a little bit before I introduce the second one. I don't like to introduce a lot of things at once because then if you do, for some reason, have an adverse reaction, we wouldn't know which one. And now you've lost all your tools in your toolbox and we don't want that. So
I'm really bad about that. Yeah. I take 16 things all at once and you're like, which one works? I don't know. Yeah,
exactly.
All right. Well, that's it for today.
All right. Thank you so much.